way and refused everything. Raistlin nibbled at his food absently, his golden eyes studying Fizban. Teeka, feeling awkward and out of place among the graceful elven women, couldn't eat a morsel. Karaman decided he knew why elves were so slender. The food consisted of fruits and vegetables, cooked in delicate sauces, served with bread and cheese and a very light, spicy wine. After starving for 4 days in the cage, the food did nothing to satisfy the big warrior's hunger. The only two in the entire city of Kralinost to enjoy the feast were Tasselhoff and Fizban. The old magician carried on a one-sided argument with an aspen, while Tasselhoff simply enjoyed everything, discovering later, to his surprise, that two golden spoons, a silver knife, and a butter dish made of a seashell had wandered into one of his pouches. The red moon was not visible. Solinari, a slim band of silver in the sky, began to wane. As the first stars appeared, the Speaker of the Suns nodded sadly at his son. Gilthanas rose and moved to stand next to his father's chair. Gilthanas began to sing. The elven words flowed into a melody, delicate and beautiful. As he sang, Gilthanas held a small crystal lamp in both hands, the candlelight within illuminating his marble features. Tanis, listening to the song, closed his eyes. His head sank into his hands.
What is it?
What do the words mean? Sturm asked softly. Tanis raised his head. His voice breaking, he whispered.
The sun, the splendid eye of all our heavens, dives from the day. And leaves the dozing sky spangled with fireflies, deepening in gray.
The elves about the table stood quietly now, taking up their own lamps as they joined in the song. Their voices blended, weaving a haunting song of infinite sadness.
Now sleep. Our oldest friend lulls in the trees and calls us in. The leaves give off cold fire. They blaze into ash at the end of the year. And birds coast on the winds and wheel to the north when autumn ends. The day grows dark, the seasons bare, but we await the sun's green fire upon the trees.
Points of flickering lantern light spread from the courtyard like ripples in a still, calm pond, through the streets, into the forests and beyond. And with each lamp lit, another voice was raised in song, until the surrounding forest itself seemed to sing with despair.
The wind dives through the days. By season, by moon, great kingdoms arise. The breath of firefly, of bird, of trees, of mankind fades in a word. Now sleep. Our oldest friend lulls in the trees and calls us in. The age, the thousand lives of men and their stories, go to their graves, but we, the people, long in poem and glory, fade from the song.
Gilthanas's voice died away. With a gentle breath, he blew out the flame of his lamp. One by one, as they had started, the others around the table ended the song and blew out their candles. All through Kralinost, the voices hushed, and the flames were extinguished until it seemed that silence and darkness swept over the land. At the very end, only the distant mountains returned the final chords of the song, like the whispering leaves falling to the ground. The speaker stood.
And now, he said heavily, it is time for the meeting of the High Council. It will be held in the Hall of the Sky. Tantalus, if you will lead your companions there.
The hall of the sky, they discovered, was a huge square lit by torches. The giant dome of the heavens, glittering with stars, arched above it. But it was dark to the north, where lightning played on the horizon. The speaker motioned to Tanis to bring the companions to stand near him. Then the entire population of Qualinost gathered around them. There was no need to call for silence. Even the wind hushed as the speaker began.
Here you see our situation.
He gestured at something on the ground. The companions saw a gigantic map beneath their feet. Tasselhoff, standing in the middle of the plains of Abyssinia, drew in a deep breath. He couldn't remember ever seeing anything so wonderful.
"There's Solace!" he cried in excitement, pointing.
"Yes, Kenderkin,"
the speaker replied.
"And that is where the dragon armies mass. In Solace."
He touched the spot on the map with a staff.
"And in Haven. Lord Verminard has made no secret of his plans to invade Qualinesti. He waits only to gather his forces and secure his supply routes. We cannot hope to stand against such a horde."
"Surely Qualinost is easily defended,"
Sturm spoke up.
"There is no direct route over land. We crossed bridges over ravines that no army in existence could get through if the bridges were cut. Why do you not stand up to them?"
"If it were only an army, we could defend Qualinesti,"
the speaker answered.
"But what can we do against dragons?"
The speaker spread his hands helplessly.
"Nothing. According to legends, it was only with the dragon lance that the mighty Huma defeated them. There are none now, at least that we know of, who remember the secret of that great weapon."
Fizban started to speak, but Raistlin hushed him.
"No,"
the speaker continued.
"We must abandon this city and these woods. We plan to go west, into the unknown lands, there, hoping to find a new home for our people. Or perhaps even return to Sylvanesti, the most ancient elven home. Until a week ago our plans were advancing well. It will take 3 days of forced marching for the Dragon High Lord to move his men into attack position, and spies will inform us when the army leaves Solace. We will have time to escape into the west. But then we learned of a third dragon army at Pax Tharkas less than a day's journey from us. Unless that army is stopped, we are doomed."
"And you know a way to stop that army?" Tanis asked.
"Yes."
The speaker looked at his youngest son.
"As you know, men from Gateway and Solace and surrounding communities are being held prisoner in the fortress of Pax Tharkas, working as slaves for the Dragon High Lord. Verminard is clever. Lest his slaves revolt, he keeps the women and children of these men hostages, ransom for the men's behavior. It is our belief that, were these captives freed, the men would turn on their masters and destroy them. It was to have been Gilthanas's mission to free the hostages and lead the revolt. He would have taken the humans south into the mountains, drawing off this third army in pursuit, allowing us time to escape."
"And what of the humans then?" Riverwind asked harshly.
"It seems to me you throw them to the dragon armies as a desperate man throws hunks of meat to pursuing wolves." "Lord Verminard will not keep them alive much longer, we fear. The ore is nearly gone. He is gleaning every last little bit. Then the slaves' usefulness to him will end. There are valleys in the mountains, caves where the humans can live and fend off the dragon armies. They can easily hold the mountain passes against them, especially now that winter is setting in. Admittedly, some may die, but that is a price that must be paid. If you had the choice, man of the plains, would you rather die in slavery or die fighting?"
Riverwind, not answering, stared down at the map darkly.
"Gilthanas's mission failed,"
Tanis said. And now you want us to try and lead the revolt?
Yes, Tantalus,
the speaker replied. Gilfanas knows a way into Pax Tharkas,
the Slamori.
He can lead you into the fortress. You not only have a chance to free your own kind, but you offer the elves a chance to escape. The speaker's voice hardened.
A chance to live. That many elves were not given when humans brought the cataclysm down upon us.
Riverwind glanced up, scowling. Even Sturm's expression darkened. The speaker drew a deep breath, then sighed.
Please forgive me, he said. I do not mean to flog you with whips from the past. We are not uncaring about the human's plight. I send my son Gilfanas with you willingly, knowing that, if we part, we may never see each other again. I make this sacrifice so that my people, and yours, may live.
We must have time to consider, Tanis said, though he knew what his decision must be. The speaker nodded, and elven warriors cleared a path through the crowd, leading the companions to a grove of trees. Here, they left them alone. Tanis's friends stood before him, their solemn faces masks of light and shadow beneath the stars. All this time, he thought, I have fought to keep us together. Now I see that we must separate. We cannot risk taking the disks into Pax Tharkas, and Gold Moon will not leave them behind. I will go to Pax Tharkas, Tanis said softly. But I believe it is time now that we separate, my friends. Before you speak, let me say this. I would send Teeka, Gold Moon, Riverwind, Caramon, and Raislin, and you, Fizban, with the elves, in hopes that you may carry the disks to safety. The disks are too precious to risk on a raid into Pax Tharkas.
That may be, half-elf,
Raislin whispered from the depths of his cowl.
But it is not among the Qualinasti elves that Gold Moon will find the one she seeks.
How do you know?
Tanis asked, startled. He doesn't know anything, Tanis, Sturm interrupted, bitterly. More talk.
Raislin,
Tanis repeated, ignoring Sturm.
You heard the knight,
the mage hissed.
I know nothing.
Tanis sighed, letting it go, and glanced around. You named me your leader.
Aye, we did, lad, said Flint suddenly. But this decision is coming from your head, not your heart. Deep inside, you don't really believe we should split up.
Well, I'm not staying with these elves, Teeka said, folding her arms across her chest. I'm going with you, Tanis. I plan to become a swordswoman like Kitiara.
Tanis winced. Hearing Kitiara's name was like a physical blow. I will not hide with elves, Riverwind said. Especially if it means leaving my kind behind to fight for me. He and I are one, Gold Moon said, putting her hand on his arm.
Besides, she said more softly, somehow I know that what the mage says is true. The leader is not among the elves. They want to flee the world, not fight for it.
We're all going, Tanis,
Flint said firmly. The half-elf looked helplessly around at the group. Then he smiled and shook his head.
You're right.
I didn't truly believe we should separate. It's the sensible, logical thing to do, of course. Which is why we won't do it.
Now maybe we can get some sleep,
Fizban yawned. Wait a minute, old one, Tanis said sternly. You are not one of us. You're definitely going with the elves.
Am I?
The mage asked softly, as his eyes lost their vague, unfocused look. He stared at Tanis with such a penetrating, almost menacing gaze
that the half-elf involuntarily took a step back, suddenly sensing an almost palpable aura of power surrounding the old man. His voice was soft and intense.
I go where I choose in this world, and I choose to go with you, Tanis, half-elven.
Raistlin glanced at Tanis as if to say, Now you understand. Tanis, irresolute, returned the glance. He regretted putting off discussing this with Raistlin, but wondered how they could confer now, knowing the old man would not leave.
I speak this to you, Raistlin, Tanis said suddenly, using camp talk, a corrupted form of common developed among the racially mixed mercenaries of Kryn. The twins had done a bit of mercenary work in their time, as had most of the companions, in order to eat. Tanis knew Raistlin would understand. He was fairly certain the old man wouldn't.
We talk if want,
Raistlin answered in the same language,
but little know I.
You fear? Why?
Raistlin's strange eyes stared far away as he answered slowly.
I know not, Tanis, but you are right. Their power be within Old One. I feel great power, I fear.
His eyes gleamed, and I hunger. The mage sighed and seemed to return from wherever it was he had been.
But he right. Try to stop him. Very much danger.
As if there wasn't enough already,
Tanis said bitterly, switching back to common.
We take our own in with us, in the form of a doddering old magician.
Others there are, as dangerous, perhaps,
Raistlin said with a meaningful look at his brother. The mage returned to common.
I am weary. I must sleep. Are you staying, brother?
Yes,
Caraman answered, exchanging glances with Sturm.
We're going to talk with Tanis.
Raistlin nodded and gave his arm to Fizbin. The old mage and the young one left, the old mage lashing out at a tree with his staff, accusing it of trying to sneak up on him.
As if one crazed mage wasn't bad enough, Flint muttered. I'm going to bed.
One by one the others left until Tanis stood with Caraman and Sturm. Wearily, Tanis turned to face them. He had a feeling he knew what this was going to be about. Caraman's face was flushed, and he stared at his feet. Sturm stroked his mustaches and regarded Tanis thoughtfully.
Well?
Tanis asked. Gilthinas, Sturm answered. Tanis frowned and scratched his beard.
That's my business, not yours,
he said shortly. It is our business, Tanis, Sturm persisted. If he's leading us into Pax Tharkas.
We don't want to pry, but it's obvious there's a score to settle between you two. I've seen his eyes when he looks at you, Tanis, and if I were you, I wouldn't go anywhere without a friend at my back.
Caraman looked at Tanis earnestly, his brow furrowed.
I know he's an elf and all,
the big man said slowly, but
like Sturm says, he gets a funny look in his eye sometimes. Don't you know the way to this Slamori? Can't we find it ourselves? I don't trust him.
Neither do Sturm and Raist.
Listen, Tanis, Sturm said, seeing the half-elf's face darken with anger. If Gilthinas was in such danger in Solace as he claimed, why was he casually sitting in the inn? And then there's his story about his warriors accidentally running into a whole damn army. Tanis, don't shake your head so quickly. He may not be evil, just misguided. What if Verminard's got some hold over him? Perhaps the Dragon High Lord convinced him he'd spare his people if, in return, he betrays us. Maybe that's why he was in Solace, waiting for us.
That's ridiculous,
Tanis snapped.
How would he know we were coming?
We didn't exactly keep our journey from Zakhtzaroth to Solace secret. Sturm returned coldly. We saw Draconians all along the way, and those that escaped Zakhtzaroth must have realized we came for the discs.
Verminard probably knows our descriptions better than he knows his own mother.
No. I don't believe it.
Tanis said angrily, glaring at Sturm and Caramon.
You two are wrong. I'll stake my life on it. I grew up with Gilthanas. I know him. Yes, there is a score to settle between us, but we have discussed it, and the matter is closed. I'll believe he's a traitor to his people the day I believe you or Caramon turn traitor, and no, I don't know the way to Pax Tharkas. I've never been there.
And one more thing, Tanis shouted, now in a fury. If there's people I don't trust in this group, it's that brother of yours and that old man. He stared accusingly at Caramon. The big man grew pale and lowered his eyes. He began to turn away. Tanis came to his senses, suddenly realizing what he had said. I'm sorry, Caramon. He put his hand on the warrior's arm. I didn't mean that. Raistlin's saved our lives more than once on this insane journey. It's just that I can't believe Gilthanas is a traitor.
We know, Tanis, Sturm said quietly, and we trust your judgment, but it's too dark a night to walk with your eyes closed, as my people say.
Tanis sighed and nodded. He put his other hand on Sturm's arm. The knight clasped him, and the three men stood in silence. Then they left the grove and walked back to the Hall of the Sky. They could still hear the speaker talking with his warriors.
What does Slamori mean? Caramon asked.
Secret way, Tanis answered.
Tanis woke with a start, his hand on the dagger at his belt. A dark shape crouched over him in the night, blotting out the stars overhead. Reaching up quickly, he grabbed hold of and yanked the person down across his body, putting his dagger to the exposed throat.
Tantalus!
There was a small scream at the sight of the steel flashing in the starlight.
Lorana!
Tanis gasped. Her body pressed against his. He could feel her trembling, and now that he was fully awake, he could see the long hair flowing loosely about her shoulders. She was dressed only in a flimsy night dress. Her cloak had fallen off in the brief struggle. Acting on impulse, Lorana had risen from her bed and slipped out into the night, throwing a cloak around her to protect her from the cold. Now she lay across Tanis's chest, too frightened to move. This was a side of Tanis she had never known existed. She realized suddenly that if she had been an enemy, she would be dead now, her throat slit.
Lorana,
Tanis repeated, thrusting the dagger back into his belt with a shaking hand. He pushed her away and sat up, angry at himself for frightening her and angry at her for awakening something deep within him. For an instant, when she lay on top of him, he was acutely conscious only of the smell of her hair, the warmth of her slender body, the play of the muscles in her thighs, the softness of her small breasts. Lorana had been a girl when he left. He returned to find a woman, a very beautiful, desirable woman.
What in the name of the abyss are you doing here at this time of night?
Tantalus,
she said, choking, pulling her cape around her tightly.
I came to ask you to change your mind. Let your friends go to free the humans in Pax Tharkas. You must come with us. Don't throw your life away. My father is desperate. He doesn't believe this will work. I know he doesn't. But he hasn't any choice. He's already mourning Gilthanas, as if he were dead. I'm going to lose my brother. I can't lose you, too.
She began to sob. Tanis glanced around hastily. There were almost certainly elven guards around. If the elves caught him in this compromising situation,
Lorana,
he said, gripping her shoulders and shaking her,
you're not a child anymore. You've got to grow up and grow up fast. I wouldn't let my friends face danger without me. I know the risks we are taking. I'm not blind.
but if we can free the humans from Verminard and give you and your people time to escape, it's a chance we have to take. There comes a time, Lorana, when you've got to risk your life for something you believe in. Something that means more than life itself. Do you understand?
She looked up at him through a mass of golden hair. Her sobs stopped, and she ceased to tremble. She stared at him very intently.
Do you understand, Lorana?
He repeated.
Yes, Tantalus.
She answered softly.
I understand.
Good. He sighed.
Now go back to bed.
Quickly. You've put me in danger. If Gilfinas saw us like this...
Lorana stood up and walked swiftly from the grove, flitting along the streets and buildings like the wind among the aspens. Sneaking past the guards to get back inside her father's dwelling was simple. She and Gilfinas had been doing it since childhood. Returning quietly to her room, she stood outside her father's and mother's door for a moment, listening. There was light inside. She could hear parchment rustling, smell an acrid odor. Her father was burning papers. She heard her mother's soft murmur calling her father to bed. Lorana closed her eyes for a moment in silent agony. Then her lips tightened in firm resolve. And she ran down the dark, chill hallway to her bedchamber.
Chapter 8. Doubts. Ambush. A new friend. The elves woke the companions before dawn. Storm clouds lowered on the northern horizon, reaching like grasping fingers toward Qualinasti. Gilfinas arrived after breakfast, dressed in a tunic of blue cloth and a suit of chain mail.
"We have supplies," he said, gesturing toward the warriors, who held packs in their hands. "We can also provide weapons or armament, if you have need."
"Tika needs armor and shield and sword," said Caramon.
"We will provide what we can," Gilfinas said. "Though I doubt if we have a full set of armor small enough."
"How is Theros Ironfeld this morning?" Gold Moon asked.
"He rests comfortably, cleric of Mishikal." Gilfinas bowed respectfully to Gold Moon. "My people will, of course, take him with them when we leave. You may bid him farewell."
Elves soon returned with armor of every make and description for Tika, and a lightweight, short sword, favored by the elven women. Tika's eyes glowed when she saw the helm and shield. Both were of elvish design, tooled and decorated with jewels. Gilfinas took the helm and shield from the elf.
"I have yet to thank you for saving my life in the inn," he said to Tika.
"Accept these.
They are my mother's ceremonial armor, dating back to the time of the Kinslayer Wars. These would have gone to my sister, but Lorana and I both believe you are the proper owner."
"How beautiful," Tika murmured, blushing.
She accepted the helm, then looked at the rest of the armor in confusion.
"I don't know what goes where,"
she confessed.
"I'll help,"
Caramon offered eagerly.
"I'll handle this,"
Gold Moon said firmly. Picking up the armor, she led Tika into a grove of trees.
"What does she know about armor?"
Caramon grumbled. Riverwind looked at the warrior and smiled, the rare, infrequent smile that softened his stern face.
"You forget," he said. "She is chieftain's daughter. It was her duty, in her father's absence, to lead the tribe to war. She knows a great deal about armor, warrior, and even more about the heart that beats beneath it."
Caramon flushed. Nervously, he picked up a pack of supplies and glanced inside.
"What's this junk?" he asked.
"Quithpa," said Gilfinas. "Iron rations, in your language. It will last us many weeks, if need be."
It looks like dried fruit,
Caramon said in disgust. That's what it is, Tanis replied, grinning. Caramon groaned. Dawn was just beginning to tinge the wispy storm clouds with a pale, chill light when Gylfanas led the party out of Qualinasti. Tanis kept his eyes straight ahead, refusing to look back. He wished that his final trip here could have been happier. He had not seen Lorana all morning, and though he felt relieved to have avoided a tearful farewell, he secretly wondered why she hadn't come to bid him goodbye. The trail moved south, descending gradually but constantly. It had been thick and overgrown with brush, but the party of warriors Gylfanas led before had cleared it as they moved, so that walking was relatively easy. Caramon walked beside Teeka, resplendent in her mismatched armor, instructing her on the use of her sword. Unfortunately, the teacher was having a bad time of it. Gold Moon had slit Teeka's red barmaid skirt up to her thighs for easier movement. Bits of fluffy white from Teeka's fur-trimmed undergarments peeped enticingly through the slits. Her legs were visible as she walked, and the girl's legs were just as Caramon had always imagined, round and well-formed. Thus, Caramon found it rather difficult to concentrate on his lesson. Absorbed in his pupil, he did not notice that his brother had disappeared.
"Where's the young mage?"
Gylfanas asked harshly.
"Maybe something's happened to him,"
Caramon said, worriedly, cursing himself for forgetting his brother. The warrior withdrew his sword and started back along the trail.
"Nonsense,"
Gylfanas stopped him.
"What could have happened to him? There is no enemy for miles. He must have gone off somewhere for some purpose."
"What are you saying?" Caramon asked, glowering.
"Maybe he left to collect what I need for the making of my magic, elf."
Raistlin whispered, emerging from the brush.
"And to replenish the herbs that heal my cough." "Raist!"
Caramon nearly hugged him in his relief.
"You shouldn't go off by yourself. It's dangerous."
"My spell components are secret,"
Raistlin whispered, irritably, shoving his brother away. Leaning on the staff of Magius, the mage rejoined Fizban in the line. Gylfanas cast a sharp glance at Tanis, who shrugged and shook his head. As the group continued on, the trail became steeper and steeper, leading down from the aspen woods to the pines of the lowlands. It joined up with a clear brook that soon became a raging stream as they traveled farther south. When they stopped for a hasty lunch, Fizban came over and hunkered down beside Tanis.
"Someone's following us,"
he said in a penetrating whisper.
"What?"
Tanis asked, his head snapping up to stare at the old man incredulously.
"Yes, indeed."
The old mage nodded solemnly.
"I've seen it, darting in and out among the trees."
Sturm saw Tanis's look of concern. "What's the matter?" "The old one says someone's following us."
"Bah!"
Gylfanas threw down his last bit of quith pa in disgust and stood up.
"That's insane. Let us go now. The Slamori is still many miles, and we must be there by sundown."
"I'll take rear guard," Sturm said to Tanis, softly. They walked through the ragged pines for several more hours. The sun slanted down in the sky, lengthening shadows across the trail. When the group came suddenly to a clearing,
"Psst!"
Tanis warned, falling back in alarm. Caramon, instantly alert, drew his sword, motioning for Sturm and his brother with his free hand.
"What is it?"
piped Tasselhoff.
"I can't see!
Shh!"
Tanis glared at the kender, and Tass clapped his own hand over his own mouth to save Tanis the trouble. The clearing was the site of a recent bloody fight. Bodies of men and hobgoblins lay scattered about in the obscene postures of brutal death. The companions looked about fearfully,
and listened for long minutes but could hear nothing above the roar of the water.
No enemy for miles.
Sturm glared at Gilthanas and started to step out into the clearing.
Wait, Tanis said. I thought I saw something move. Maybe one of them's still alive,
Sturm said coolly and walked forward. The rest followed more slowly. A low, moaning sound came from beneath two hobgoblin bodies. The warriors walked toward the carnage, swords level.
Caramon,
Tanis gestured. The big warrior shoved the bodies to one side. Beneath was a moaning figure.
Human,
Caramon reported.
And covered with blood, unconscious, I think.
The rest came up to look at the man on the ground. Goldmoon started to kneel down, but Caramon stopped her.
No, lady,
he said gently.
It would be senseless to heal him if we just have to kill him again. Remember, humans fought for the Dragon High Lord in Solace.
The group gathered round to examine the man. He wore chain mail that was of good quality, if rather tarnished. His clothes were rich, though the cloth had worn thin in places. He appeared to be in his late 30s. His hair was thick and black, his chin firm, and his features regular. The stranger opened his eyes and stared up at the companions blearily.
Thank the gods of the Seekers,
he said hoarsely.
My friends, are they all dead?
Worry about yourself first, Sturm said sternly. Tell us who your friends were, the humans or the hobgoblins?
The humans. Fighters against the dragon men.
The man broke off, his eyes widening.
Gilthanas? Eben,
Gilthanas said in quiet surprise.
How did you survive the battle at the ravine? How did you, for that matter?
The man named Eben tried to stagger to his feet. Caramon reached out a hand to help him when suddenly Eben pointed.
Look out! Drick!
Caramon whipped around, letting Eben fall back with a groan. The others turned to see 12 Draconians standing at the edge of the clearing, weapons drawn.
All strangers in the land are to be taken to the Dragon High Lord for questioning,
one called out.
We charge you to come with us peacefully.
No one was supposed to know about this path to slay Mori, Sturm whispered to Tanis with a meaningful glance at Gilthanas.
According to the elf, that is.
We do not take orders from Lord Verminard,
Tanis yelled, ignoring Sturm.
You will soon enough,
the Draconian said and waved its arm. The creatures surged forward to attack. Fizban, standing near the edge of the woods, pulled something from his pouch and began to mumble a few words.
Not fireball,
Raistlin hissed, grabbing the old mage's arm.
You'll incinerate everyone out there.
Oh, really? I suppose you're right.
The old mage sighed in disappointment, then brightened.
Wait. I'll think of something else.
Just stay here, under cover, Raistlin ordered. I'm going to my brother.
Now, what was that web spell?
The old man pondered. Tika, her new sword drawn and ready, trembled with fear and excitement. One Draconian rushed her, and she swung a tremendous blow. The blade missed the Draconian by a mile, Caramon's head by inches. Pulling Tika behind him, he knocked the Draconian down with the flat of his sword. Before it could rise, he stepped on its throat, breaking its neck.
Get behind me,
he said to Tika, then glanced down at the sword she was still waving around wildly.
On second thought,
Caramon amended nervously.
Run over to those trees with the old man and Gold Moon. There's a good girl.
I will not, Tika said indignantly.
I'll show him,
she muttered, her sweaty palms slipping on the hilt of the sword. Two more Draconians charged Karaman, but his brother was beside him now, the two combining magic and steel to destroy their enemy. Tika knew she would only get in their way, and she feared Raistlin's anger more than she feared Draconian's. She looked around to see if anyone needed her help. Sturm and Tanis fought side by side. Gilfinas made an unlikely team with Flint, while Tasselhoff, his hoopak planted solidly in the ground, sent a deadly barrage of rocks whizzing into the field. Gold Moon stood beneath the trees, Riverwind near her. The old magician had pulled out a spellbook and was flipping through its pages.
"Web, web, how did that go?"
he mumbled.
"Ah!"
A screech behind Tika nearly caused her to swallow her tongue. Whirling around, she dropped her sword in alarm as a Draconian, laughing horribly, launched itself into the air straight at her. Panic-stricken, Tika gripped her shield in both hands and struck the Draconian in its hideous, reptilian face. The impact nearly jarred the shield from her hands, but it knocked the creature onto its back, unconscious. Tika picked up her sword and, grimacing in disgust, stabbed the creature through the heart. Its body immediately turned to stone, encasing her sword. Tika yanked at it, but it remained stuck fast.
"Tika, to your left!"
yelled Tasselhoff shrilly. Tika stumbled around and saw another Draconian. Swinging her shield, she blocked its sword thrust. Then, with a strength born of terror, she hit at the creature again and again with her shield, knowing only that she had to kill the thing. She kept bashing until she felt a hand on her arm. Whipping around, her blood-stained shield ready, she saw Karaman.
"It's all right," the big warrior said soothingly. "It's all over, Tika. They're all dead. You did fine. Just fine."
Tika blinked. For a moment, she didn't recognize the warrior. Then, with a shudder, she lowered her shield.
"I wasn't very good with the sword," she said, starting to tremble in reaction to her fear and the memory of the horrible creature lunging at her.
Karaman saw her start to shake. He reached out and clasped her in his arms, stroking the sweat-damp, red curls.
"You were braver than many men I've seen. Experienced warriors,"
the big man said in a deep voice. Tika looked up into Karaman's eyes. Her terror melted away, replaced by exultation. She pressed against Karaman. The feel of his hard muscles, the smell of sweat mingled with leather, increased her excitement. Tika flung her arms around his neck and kissed him with such violence her teeth bit into his lip. She tasted blood in her mouth. Karaman, astonished, felt the tingle of pain, an odd contrast to the softness of her lips, and was overwhelmed with desire. He wanted this woman more than any other woman, and there had been many in his life. He forgot where he was, who was around him. His brain and blood were on fire, and he ached with the pain of his passion. Crushing Tika to his chest, he held her and kissed her with bruising intensity. The pain of his embrace was delicious to Tika. She longed for the pain to grow and envelop her, but at the same time she felt suddenly cold and afraid. Remembering stories told by the other barmaids of the terrible, wonderful things that happened between men and women, she began to panic. Karaman completely lost all sense of reality. He caught Tika up in his arms, with a wild idea of carrying her into the woods, when he felt a cold, familiar hand on his shoulder. The big man stared at his brother and regained his senses with a gasp. He gently set Tika on her feet. Dizzy and disoriented, she opened her eyes to see Raistlin standing beside his brother, regarding her with his strange,
glittering stare. Tika's face burned. She backed away, stumbled over the body of the Draconian, then picked up her shield and ran. Karaman swallowed, cleared his throat, and started to say something, but Raistlin simply glanced at him in disgust and walked back to rejoin Fizban. Karaman, trembling like a newborn colt, sighed shakily and walked over to where Sturm, Tanis, and Gilthanas stood, talking to Eben.
"No, I'm fine," the man assured them. "I just felt a little faint when I saw those creatures, that's all. You really have a cleric among you? That's wonderful. But don't waste her healing powers on me. Just a scratch. It's more their blood than mine. My party and I were tracking these Draconians through the woods when we were attacked by at least 40 hobgoblins."
"And you alone lived to tell the tale?" Gilthanas said.
"Yes,"
Eben replied, returning the elf's suspicious gaze. "I am an expert swordsman, as you know. I killed these." He gestured to the bodies of 6 hobgoblins who lay around him, then fell to the overwhelming numbers. The rest must have assumed I was dead and left me. But enough of my heroics. You fellows are pretty good with swords yourselves. Where are you headed?"
"Someplace called the Slate," began Karaman, but Gilthanas cut him off.
"Our journey is secret," Gilthanas said. Then he added in a tentative voice, "We could use an expert swordsman."
"As long as you're fighting Draconians, your fight is my fight," Eben said cheerfully.
He pulled his pack out from under the body of a hobgoblin and slung it over his shoulder.
"My name's Eben Shatterstone. I come from Gateway. You've probably heard of my family," he said. "We had one of the most impressive mansions west of—"
"That's it!" cried Fizban. "I remembered!"
Suddenly, the air was filled with strands of sticky, floating cobweb. The sun set just as the group reached an open plain edged by tall mountain peaks. Rivaling the mountains for dominance of the land before it was the gigantic fortress known as Pax Tharkas, which guarded the pass between the mountains. The companions stared at it in awed silence. Tika's eyes widened at the sight of the massive twin towers soaring into the sky.
"I've never seen anything so big. Who built it? They must have been powerful men."
"It was not men,"
said Flint sadly. The dwarf's beard quivered as he looked at Pax Tharkas with a wistful expression.
"It was elves and dwarves working together. Once, long ago, when times were peaceful."
"The dwarf speaks truly," Gilthanas said.
"Long ago Kith Cannon broke his father's heart and left the ancient home of Sylvanesti. He and his people came to the beautiful woods given them by the Emperor of Ergoth, following the scribing of the sword-sheath scroll that ended the Kinslayer Wars. Elves have lived in Qualinesti for long centuries since Kith Canaan's death. His greatest achievement, however, was the building of Pax Tharkas. Standing between elven and dwarven kingdoms, it was constructed by both in a spirit of friendship since lost on Kryn. It grieves me to see it now, the bastion of a mighty war machine."
Even as Gilthanas spoke, the companions saw the huge gate that stood at the front of Pax Tharkas swing open. An army, long rows of Draconians, hobgoblins and goblins, marched out into the plains. The sound of braying horns echoed back from the mountaintops. Watching them from above was a great red dragon. The companions cowered among the scrub brush and trees. Though the dragon was too far away to see them, the dragon fear touched them even from this distance.
"They march on Qualinesti,"
Gilthanas said, his voice breaking.
"We must get inside and free the prisoners. Then Verminard will be forced to call the army back.
You're going inside Pax Tharkas?
Eben gasped.
Yes.
Gilthinas answered reluctantly, apparently regretting he had said so much.
Whew!
Eben blew out a deep breath.
You people have guts, I'll give you that.
So, how do we get in there? Wait until the army leaves? There will probably be only a couple of guards at the front gate. We could handle them easily, couldn't we, big man?
He nudged Caramon.
Sure.
Caramon grinned. That is not the plan, Gilthinas said coldly. The elf pointed to a narrow vale leading into the mountains, just visible in the rapidly fading light. There is our way. We will cross in the cover of darkness. He stood up and started off. Tanis hurried forward to catch up with him.
What do you know of this, Eben? The half-elf asked in Elven, glancing back to where the man was chatting with Tika.
Gilthinas shrugged.
He was with the band of humans who fought with us at the ravine. Those who survived were taken to Solace and died there. I suppose he could have escaped. I did, after all.
Gilthinas said, glancing sideways at Tanis.
He comes from Gateway, where his father and father before him were wealthy merchants. The others told me, when he was out of hearing, that his family lost their money, and he has since earned his living by his sword.
I figured as much, Tanis said. His clothes are rich, but they've seen better days.
You made the right decision bringing him along.
I dared not leave him behind, Gilthinas answered grimly.
One of us should keep an eye on him.
Yes.
Tanis fell silent.
And on me, too, you're thinking?
Gilthinas said in a tight voice.
I know what the others say. The knight, especially. But I swear to you, Tanis, I'm not a traitor. I want one thing.
The elf's eyes gleamed feverishly in the dying light.
I want to destroy this Verminard. If you could have seen him as his dragon destroyed my people, I'd gladly sacrifice my life.
Gilthinas stopped abruptly.
And our lives as well? Tanis asked.
As Gilthinas turned to face him, his almond-shaped eyes regarding Tanis without emotion.
If you must know, Tantalus, your life means that.
He snapped his fingers.
But the lives of my people are everything to me. This is all I care for now.
He walked on ahead as Sturm caught up with them. Tanis, he said.
The old man was right. We are being followed.
Chapter 9. Suspicions Grow. The Slaamori. The narrow trail climbed steeply up from the plains into a wooded valley in the foothills. Evening's shadows gathered close around them as they followed the stream up into the mountain. They had traveled only a short distance, however, when Gilthinas left the trail and disappeared into the brush. The companions stopped, looking at each other doubtfully.
"This is madness,"
Eben whispered to Tanis.
"Trolls live in this valley. Who do you think made that trail?"
The dark-haired man took Tanis's arm with a cool familiarity. The half-elf found disconcerting.
"Admittedly, I'm the new kid in town, so to speak,
and the gods know you don't have any reason to trust me, but
how much do you know about this Gilthinas?"
"I know," Tanis began, but Eben ignored him.
"There were some of us who didn't believe that Draconian army stumbled onto us by accident, if you take my meaning. My boys and I had been hiding in the hills, fighting the dragon armies ever since they hit Gateway. Last week, these elves showed up out of nowhere. They told us they were going to raid one of the dragon high lord's fortresses, and would we like to come along and help? We said, sure, why not? Anything to stick a bone in the dragon high man's craw. As we hiked, we began to get really nervous. There were Draconian tracks all over the place.
but it didn't bother the elves.
Gilthanas said the tracks were old. That night we made camp and posted a watch. It didn't do us a lot of good, just gave us about 20 seconds warning before the Draconians hit, and...
Eben glanced around and moved even closer.
While we were trying to wake up, grab our weapons, and fight those foul creatures, I heard the elves calling out as if someone was lost. And who do you suppose they were calling for?
Eben regarded Tanis intently. The half-elf frowned and shook his head, irritated at the dramatics.
Gilthanas!
Eben hissed.
He was gone! They shouted and shouted for him, their leader!
The man shrugged.
Whether he ever showed up or not, I don't know. I was captured. They took us to Solace, where I got away. Anyway, I'd think twice about following that elf. He may have had a good reason to be gone when the Draconians attacked, but...
I've known Gilthanas a long time. Tanis interrupted, gruffly, more disturbed than he wanted to admit.
Sure. Just thought you should know.
Eben said, smiling sympathetically. He clapped Tanis on the back and dropped back to stand by Tika. Tanis didn't have to look around to know Karaman and Sturm had heard every word. Neither said anything, however. And before Tanis could talk to them, Gilthanas appeared suddenly, slipping out from among the trees.
"It's not that much farther," the elf said. "The brush thins up ahead, and the walking is easier."
"I say we just go in the front gate,"
Eben said.
"I agree," Karaman said.
The big man glanced at his brother, who sat limply beneath a tree. Gold Moon was pale with fatigue. Even Tasselhoff's head hung wearily.
"We could camp here tonight and go in by the front gates at dawn," Sturm suggested.
"We stick to the original plan,"
Tanis said sharply.
"We make camp once we reach the Slarmori."
Then Flint spoke up.
"You can go ring the bell at the gate and ask Lord Verminard to let you in if you want, Sturm Brightblade. I'm sure he'd oblige. Come on, Tanis."
The dwarf stomped off down the trail.
"At least," Tanis said to Sturm in a low voice, "maybe this will throw off our pursuer."
"Whoever or whatever it is," Sturm answered. "It's woodscrafty, I'll say that for it. Every time I caught a glimpse and started back for a closer look, it vanished. I thought about ambushing it, but there wasn't time." The group emerged from the brush, thankfully, arriving at the base of a gigantic granite cliff. Gilthanas walked along the cliff face for several hundred feet, his hand feeling for something on the rock. Suddenly, he stopped.
"We are here,"
he whispered. Reaching into his tunic, he removed a small gem that began to glow a soft, muted yellow. Running his hand over the rock wall, the elf found what he was searching for, a small niche in the granite. He placed the gem in the niche and began reciting ancient words and tracing unseen symbols in the night air.
"Very impressive,"
whispered Fizban.
"I didn't know he was one of us,"
he said to Raislin.
"A dabbler, nothing more,"
the mage replied. Leaning wearily on his staff, he watched Gilthanas intently, however. Suddenly, and silently, the huge block of stone separated from the cliff face and began moving slowly to one side. The companions backed up as a blast of chill, dank air flowed from the gaping hole in the rock.
"What's in there?"
Karaman asked suspiciously.
"I do not know what is in there now," Gilthanas replied. "I have never entered. I know of this place only through the lore of my people."
"All right,"
Karaman growled.
"What used to be in there?"
Gilthanas paused, then said,
"This was the burial chamber of Kith Cannon."
"More spooks,"
Flint grumbled, peering into the darkness.
Send the mage in first so he can warn them we're coming.
Throw the dwarf in,
Raistlin returned.
They are accustomed to living in dark, dank caves.
You speak of the mountain dwarves,
Flint said, his beard bristling.
It has been long years since the hill dwarves lived below ground in the kingdom of Thorbarden.
Only because you were cast out,
Raistlin hissed.
Stop it, both of you,
Tanis said in exasperation.
Raistlin, what do you sense about this place?
Evil. Great evil,
the mage replied.
But I sense great goodness, too,
Fizban spoke unexpectedly.
The elves are not truly forgotten within, though evil things have come to rule in their stead.
This is crazy, Eben shouted. The noise echoed uncannily among the rocks, and the others whirled, startled, staring at him in alarm.
I'm sorry,
he said, dropping his voice, but I can't believe you people are going in there. It doesn't take a magician to tell there's evil inside that hole. I can feel it.
Go back around to the front, he urged.
Sure, there'll be one or two guards, but that's nothing compared to whatever lurks in that darkness beyond.
He's got a point, Tanis, Caraman said. You can't fight the dead. We learned that in Darken Wood.
This is the only way, Gilthanas said angrily. If you are such cowards...
There's a difference between caution and cowardice, Gilthanas. Tanis said, his voice steady and calm. The half-elf thought a moment. We might be able to take on the guards at the front gate, but not before they could alert others. I say we enter and at least explore this way. Flint, you lead. Raistlin will need your light.
Shirak,
spoke the mage softly, and the crystal on his staff began to glow. He and Flint plunged into the cave, followed closely by the rest. The tunnel they entered was obviously ancient, but whether it was natural or artifact was impossible to tell.
What about our pursuer?
Sturm asked in a low voice.
Do we leave the entrance open?
A trap,
Tanis agreed softly.
Leave it open just a crack, Gilthanas, enough so that whoever's tracking us knows we came in here and can follow, but not enough so that it looks like a trap.
Gilthanas drew forth the gem, placed it in a niche on the inner side of the entrance, and spoke a few words. The stone began to slide silently back into place. At the last moment, when it was about 7 or 8 inches from closing, Gilthanas swiftly removed the gemstone. The stone shuddered to a halt, and the knight, the elf, and the half-elf joined the companions in the entrance to the Sla Mori.
There is a great deal of dust, Raistlin reported, coughing, but no tracks, at least in this part of the cave.
About 120 feet farther on, there's a crossroads,
Flint added.
We found footprints there, but we could not make out what they were. They don't look like Draconians or Hobgoblins, and they don't come this direction. The mage says the evil flows from the road to the right.
We will camp here for the night, Tanis said, near the entry. We'll post double watch, one by the door, one down the corridor. Sturm, you and Caraman first.
Gilthanas and I, Eben and Riverwind, Flint and Tasselhoff.
And me,
said Tika stoutly, though she couldn't ever remember being so tired in her life.
I'll take my turn.
Tanis was glad the darkness hid his smile.
Very well, he said.
You watch with Flint and Tasselhoff.
Good,
Tika replied. Opening her pack, she took out a blanket and lay down, conscious all the while of Caraman's eyes on her. She noticed Eben watching her, too. She didn't mind that. She was accustomed to men staring at her admiringly, and Eben was handsomer even than Caraman. Certainly he was wittier and more charming than the big warrior. Still, just the memory of Caraman's arms around her made her shiver with delightful fear.
She firmly put the memory from her mind and tried to get comfortable. The chain mail was cold, and it pinched her through her blouse, yet she noticed the others didn't take theirs off. Besides, she was tired enough to sleep dressed in a full suit of plate armor. The last thing Tika remembered as she drifted off was telling herself she was thankful she wasn't alone with Caramon.
Goldmoon saw the warrior's eyes linger on Tika. Whispering something to Riverwind, who nodded, smiling, she left him and walked over to Caramon. Touching him on the arm, she drew him away from the others into the shadow of the corridor.
"Tanis tells me you have an older sister," she stated.
"Yes,"
Caramon answered, startled.
"Kichara, though she's my half-sister."
Goldmoon smiled and laid her hand gently on Caramon's arm.
"I'm going to talk to you like an older sister."
Caramon grinned.
"Not like Kichara, you wouldn't, Lady of Kuaishu.
Kit taught me the meaning of every swear word I'd ever heard, plus a few I hadn't. She taught me to use a sword and fight with honor in the tournaments, but she also taught me how to kick a man in the groin when the judges weren't watching. No, lady, you're not much like my older sister."
Goldmoon's eyes opened wide, startled by this portrayal of a woman she guessed the half-elf loved.
"But I thought she and Tanis, I mean they—" Caramon winked.
"They certainly did," he said.